All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and John Barwin is on the line. And today, we are actually going to let you listen in as we interview Pierre Farine, who was the build winner in the Adonis Lifestyle Contest. And, you know, each of these interviews are a little bit different. I mean, obviously, Pierre was in the build category, so he had some different challenges from some of the other contestants that were in, you know, build and burn and actually in burn. So you're going to hear some different things. But, John, let's talk about some of the things really quickly, just highlight what people should be listening for in this particular interview, because it's really powerful.
Yeah, this one really illustrated some concepts that get to the root of the whole problem that people are having with diet and fitness and what they're trying to do with their bodies. And Pierre's story illustrates it really well. One of them is the expectation of body image and where your expectation of the type of body, A, that you have, and B, that you think you want to have, where those expectations may even come from, and how in many cases a lot of us have an unrealistic body image. That's at the root of a lot of dissatisfaction, like years, decades of dissatisfaction for people who are basically chasing a goal that they just frankly shouldn't be chasing. And I mean, this can get into affecting your confidence, how you view yourself, how you react with people, how they react to you. And it can be a problem if you don't get a handle on it. So Pierre has a pretty powerful story about that. And then we also get into the concept of muscle building. And how long will you try to build muscle? How much muscle do you think you want to build? When does this concept of trying to build muscle might even end for you? Which again, as this bleeds back into the body image thing, and you know how, you know where is it that you think you're going? And then I guess that ends up touching on the concept of your genetics and your sort of somatotype and where you started, and eventually, at some point in your life, you have to accept your genetic predisposition and realize you can't cheat your genetics. Now, some people tend to view or maybe focus on the thing that their genetic predisposition didn't give them instead of what it did give them. So in the case of an ectomorph, it didn't give you an ectomorph isn't blessed with huge muscles, but you typically have really, really good definition. So, and for some reason, everyone wants what they don't have instead of sort of showing off what it is that they have. So at some point, you have to accept your genetics and realize that you can't cheat them. And then I guess beyond that, some people push themselves over the edge trying to cheat their genetics through training and eventually overtraining. And testing your limits is okay, but going past your limits may not be the smartest thing to do. So that's basically some of the main points that we cover here.
Yeah, and basically, especially with the overtraining, you hear how Pierre just basically went balls to the wall for the first 2 or 3 weeks, and to the point where, you know, there's, like I say, we'll talk about this later. We talked about it before, the difference between overtraining and underconditioning, where Pierre was, quite frankly, just, he was going way over the edge. And you'll get to hear his story in just a minute, and he'll tell you exactly what he did. And you'll probably laugh. I mean, we laughed. It was pretty funny, and he's laughing at himself now. But, you know, it's like I say, this is a powerful story. He's got a different angle that you're definitely going to give a listen to, especially when it comes in the realm of self-confidence. So without further ado, here's Pierre. All right, we are on the phone with Pierre Farine, and Pierre won the build category in the last Adonis Transformation Contest, and I've also got John on the phone as well, so this is going to be pretty fun. How you doing, Pierre?
Fine. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man.
Doing good.
So, Pierre, where are you from?
I'm from Puerto Rico.
Okay, gotcha. And how old are you right now?
34.
34? Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And just kind of give us a brief synopsis or just a brief explanation of kind of how long you've been working out, you know, prior to, you know, any of the Adonis stuff. You know, what kind of workouts did you do? What kind of goals did you have? You know, that type of stuff.
Actually, I've been working out like from when I was 16 years old, you know, mm-hmm. on and off. Mm-hmm. And doing weight training, then I changed to body weight training, then I changed back to weight training. So basically, I've been, you know, close to all these years I've been training on and off.
Mm-hmm.
But until now that I've been doing, doing your program, is the time that I've been consistent with a good quality program like you guys' program. So.
Right, gotcha. And how did you find out about us in the first place?
Actually, I remember I was reading a forum, and they were talking about Eat, you know, Doug Pilon's book.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the book, and I got the, you know, the package that has the audio and everything. And I got it. I love it. I read it. And from him is that I find out about you guys.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, man.
So I believe he wrote an email, and, you know, I got interested in looking at the program that you guys were, you know, featuring.
Gotcha. Really cool. And I guess what was attractive about, you know, kind of what we're saying and doing and things like that? I mean, what made you just kind of say, you know, this is what I want to do. This makes sense to me.
Well, after, you know, all that time, from when I started bodybuilding and exercise, you know, I was reading all the bodybuilding magazines. Mm-hmm. And the main goal at that time for me was, look, I want to be 220 with 5% body fat. You know,
good God.
Over time, that goal didn't fit realistically. And when I was reading your ad about the system, it just makes sense. I mean, all of it makes sense, you know, training this way, you know. So it just clicked with me, you know, this is the right way to train if you want to train for, you know, for looks.
Right. Gotcha. So I guess what made you decide that you wanted to jump in the contest? You know, because it's funny, not a lot of people actually jump in these contests as a percentage of people that actually are doing the system. So what made you decide you wanted to enter?
Very simple. I want to have, you know, pressure, because, mm-hmm. you know, pressure makes you attain goals.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a certain amount of pressure. And, you know, entering the contest, I said to myself, you know, you're going to complete it. And you're going to do your best to win it. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, just pressure and the motivation and, you know, just... And before that, I've been doing the program, and I really like and enjoy it. So it was easy for me to, you know, to do the program because I really like and enjoy the program. So I only had to, you know, commit and just, you know, step it up and do it.
Right. Yeah, John, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I was going to say, John, that's pretty funny because, you know, that's the same thing Trish was saying. It wasn't necessarily because – Well, he wanted to win, but it was the pressure and the deadline that
yeah,
really
it was not all about the price or money or anything. That to me didn't really matter at all. It was just, you know, the pressure, you know.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, what do you think about that, John? Is that, you think that's going to be a common thread?
Well, yeah, it always is. It's no one's going to, like I said before, and I mean, we're going to say this a million times. Without a deadline and without a reward, goals aren't goals. They're just ideas, or they're just a dream. So you gotta stick deadlines on them, and you have to put on a reward on it. Otherwise, there's just, like Pierre said, there's no pressure. There's no people have, you know, lots of people have great ideas or things they want to do, and some, and we all know people who are big talkers who say, one day I'm gonna do this, one day I'm gonna do that. One day never comes. There is no such thing as one day. So you got to have, like, the day the thing ends, the day the contest ends, the day, you know, the deadline. Without the deadline, things just don't happen. So, yeah, I totally understand where Pierre's coming from. There has to be a deadline.
Yeah. So Pierre, how long was it that you actually had the program before the contest actually started? So how long were you actually using our stuff?
I believe over 3 months. If I don't myself, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you were using. So were you getting? You were getting some good results before, right?
Yeah. I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then all of a sudden the contest came around, you were just like, all right, man, I got to do it.
I just, you know, step it up. Just
gotcha.
Did a couple things that I was not used to it and, you know, went from there.
Yeah, you know, tell me that. I mean, you were talking about you were doing some things that you just weren't used to. Kind of walk us through, like, the 10 weeks of the contest. You know, what kind of things did you do?
Well, you know, for myself, I have not really any need for losing any body fat, so it was only, you know, building muscle. And as you guys know, you know, that's very hard. So I said to myself, you know, you have to step it up. You have to really, really bring it in order to build that muscle. So the first week, what I did is I did the build week, but I added one more day, just like John talks about that you can add like one more day. So I repeated one of the days, and I did 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Then prior to that, I had not been training my legs and my calves because, you know, I'm really happy with the size of them. So I only been training my upper body. So what I did is, the days that I was supposed to training legs and calves, I did a booster. I started with the shoulder booster. So those days I did the booster plus the fifth day that I did an extra, you know, day of workout. Plus I did one or two more workouts of my own where I do dips and pull-ups. And basically what I was beforehand, I want to do an experiment to see how much volume my body could handle before I break down.
Mm-hmm.
So I started that week with that. You know, 5 days of the Adonis workout, the booster, the shoulder booster, and one or two more days of doing dips, pull-ups, and presses. On my own.
How long did you last with all that?
I lasted for 5 weeks.
And then it...
Before... Yeah.
And that...
So the...
Go ahead. So, and it lasted for 5 weeks, meaning did you get injured, tendonitis or anything, or just too much?
No, basically what happened is, okay, the second week I did the first reach, once again, The first race is 3 workouts, I did 4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was doing the booster. Remember, I was not training legs, so I was doing instead the booster.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was doing one or two more workouts on my own, like I said before, of the 10 pull-ups. So the first week, second week, I did the reach for 2 weeks. Then I did another reach for 2 weeks. By the end of the fifth week, my body shut down.
I can imagine.
You know,
I
was like...
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, I only lasted for 5 weeks. That's the truth. I had to have 1 week of no exercise. And I remember you were talking about where you do that workout of the 20 reps workout.
John? Yeah. Which one?
20 rep workout that you were talking about that you did.
I'm not sure which.
Yeah, no, they're in the ones that are in the build cat or burn category.
Oh, at the end of burn. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they go up to 20. To 20, 21 reps.
You were talking about an experience that you had that you were doing the squats with the 20 rep
yeah,
workout.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. When I passed out?
Yeah. Okay. And I am being like that for a week.
Oh.
I had no energy.
Oh, no.
I was destroyed.
So that's a really good story because you actually got to real overtraining. That's real overtraining. The same, you're talking about the one where I was like passed out in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and now that's
interesting. For a week.
For a week. Now, yeah. See, I was only messed up for... So that's actually true overtraining. So, and that's a good experiment to go through,
that's actually really informative for everyone listening. Now, Pierre pushed it past, like what he said was he pushed it past the regular program, which a lot of people do add an extra day like you did, but then you added even more stuff on top of that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so now when we – and you were doing rage workouts too. And now when we tested the rage workouts, I tested them on myself and three partners and three training partners. And by the fifth week, we all broke down too. Now, and that's why the rage workouts are only meant to be 2 weeks, because I don't think anyone can actually do them for four or five weeks. We made it about 5 weeks into them. Now, granted, we were purposely testing them out and doing them back to back to see how hard they were. And that's why I anyone listening and any, I mean, don't do them for longer than 2 weeks. They're just too much.
And so Pierre, was this actually during is this the fifth week of the contest, or was this like the fifth week that you had the program from
the very beginning? The fifth week of the contest. So basically, I only did the contest for 9 weeks because I had to take 1 week for recovery, mm-hmm. and the other week I started to do the belt, but I did the belt the way you know you guys put it, you know, just the 4 days. But you know. I did that in purpose just to see how much my body could handle, and two, just to force my body to grow, you know, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, and, that makes but, I was gonna say, that makes sense to me, man.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just remember for the guys.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
To the guys, just remember to follow the guidelines when, you know, for the rage and boosters, because if not, you know, you want to get burned like myself, you know. Just don't think you can, you know, one shot go just put everything together. Doesn't work like that, you know. You have to go little by little. They're really intense. You know, they humble me, so, you know.
It's a bit of a patience thing. Everyone wants it to happen faster. I mean, we put them together. Some people may be able to train their way up to doing more. Like you said, you added a fifth day and you were managing that for a while. And me and my training partners actually did that, and we added like a set or two within each workout. So we were doing an extra day plus more sets, and that also broke us down. Like, so that's how we – I mean, this program isn't just sort of splashed onto the page. I've kind of used people at all different training experience levels to come up with the volume – that is, like you said, that's manageable without killing us.
Right. So what happened, Pierre, once you just started using the – I mean, obviously you're using it, but once you started in the sixth week when you started just – started with the build and doing it the way it was kind of supposed to be done, what happened then?
I was stronger.
Ah, so you got a lot stronger. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. So
I got stronger and – you know, my body was getting used to the workout load, but you know, I got, you know, like a week or two of transition of training, so it was, you know, slow pace when it comes to getting back to the group, you know, to the weight training.
Mhm. Yeah, makes sense, man. So what about diet? How are you eating?
Actually, my nutrition, I was only eating like one or two meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically I went by instinct and depending on my work schedule. So, for example, I will eat a meal, like a pound of meat and 8 eggs, and I will put some seasoning in it, and that will be my first meal. Mm-hmm. Then, maybe like 6 or 8 hours later, I will have another meal, which will be like a carb-type meal, mm-hmm. that will eat like something like 6 or 8 bananas, and some, I will add some coconut oil or some coconut milk on it, and I will eat it. Basically, it was very simple. You know, I really don't eat a lot of meals. I just eat only one or two meals a day, you know. I just mm-hmm. eat what I like and, you know, enjoy eating what I like. But, you know, I used to follow the bodybuilding guidelines before of 6 meals a day per workout, post-workout, all that kind of crap. But, you know, it really didn't, it didn't work for me. I never noticed any difference from that. So now I just follow your guidelines, which is, you know, colors in, colors out.
Right. Yeah, John, what do you think about that as far as what he was eating?
It
definitely sounds different.
It's different, but it works. The point is it works and there's no rule. Like, that's different than what you do. It's different than what I do. But all three of us are getting results, so it kind of – food's just food, whatever food you want. I mean, I'm pretty sure the food selection is slightly different in Puerto Rico than it is where I am right now. So we probably couldn't eat a similar diet if we really – we could try to, but it's probably easier for us to just eat however – it's easiest wherever we are, and it just doesn't make any sense to try to force it one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, so Pierre, tell us a little bit about some of your experiences now. I mean, after the contest, or you know, even after going through the contest, you know, kind of how you feel about yourself, and maybe people noticing you, or maybe treating you differently. You know, all those types of things.
Well, I have so many. Actually, first of all, I think this is one of the most important ones. You know. Before doing the contest and doing the program, I used to suffer a lot about depression, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can say I had severe depression. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times came from nowhere. To be honest, I don't know why I had it at one time or another. And I tried everything you can think of for, you know, curing the problem, but nothing worked. But I don't know why, but when I began doing you guys' program and doing the contest, and suddenly it's like, hey, I forgot to be depressed. It's like one day. It's been a long time I haven't been depressed. I'm happy. I feel good. I look great. Just, you know, go to the mirror and see myself and, wow, man, a lot of good work you've been doing. And you know, I don't have any more of no more depression. I have no more of that problem that has been, you know, with me all my life. And the only change I've been doing is I've been doing your program and you know, working out consistently, and I'm just happy, feel more calm, relaxed. I don't get angry like I used to do before. I'm more calm, relaxed, you know, something like Zen state, you know, like a Zen master. I'm more calmer, relaxed, feel great, you know, happy. As far as all their experiences, I can tell you that, you know, I have a lot of looks from the ladies now that I've been training, and, you know, I've been noticing that. And also, I showed the photos to all my friends, and they were like, man, great. I mean, you look great. A lot of them are just now training, and they're motivated. Actually, there's one who want to come here to train with me so he can enter the next contest. So all positive experiences, and, you know, gets getting better and better and better. You know, I'm very happy with, you know, just curing and fixing the depression, something that I tried so hard. And, you know, I can tell you hundreds of things I tried, and it never worked. And, you know, by doing your guys' programs and, you know, guys' programs and doing the contest, you know, I have no longer that problem. So just by that, I mean, I'm more than happy, you know.
Right, I mean, that just that in itself makes it worth it. And that's awesome, dude, because, like I say, in no way are we going to even try to make it sound like that that this is one of the things that it does. But what we're finding at the very end of it is that, you know, just talking to everyone who's been going through our program and actually seeing it through is that it's helping with confidence. It's helping with, you know, people noticing them. People are giving us a sense of giving back, like you were just talking about. People are looking at you as some inspiration, and they're actually, you know, working out, trying to work out with you, and now they're getting motivated and stuff like that. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that can't help but make you feel good.
Yeah, and Brett, I know you remember, but at first, I was not a believer in this program, so this is not like a placebo effect or something. I don't know if you remember, but I contacted you by Skype, and I was telling you, look, man, I received the, you know, I think it was the first week, like a trial, you received the first week so you can check out the workout. And I was telling you, look, I see the program. I really don't believe in this program. I mean, it's, and you were telling me, look, man, just do it, and, you know, it works. But at first, I really didn't believe the program would work, so I was like, okay, $5, let me try it and see. I didn't have any faith or belief, but I started doing the program, and, you know, everything clicked, and, you know, and by doing the program the way you guys prescribed, I realized, look, this program works, you know, because before I was like, I don't think this program is that intense, but, you know, by doing it, you know, it changed my mind. And, you know, at the end of the day, I got the results. Even at first, I didn't believe, you know, the program would work.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember just telling you, just like, hey, man, you know, just do it for 2 weeks, man. Just kind of suspend all disbelief and just do it. And get back to me in 2 weeks and tell me what you think. And I remember that conversation. So I really appreciate you bringing that up because, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize that, I mean, people, some of this stuff, because we keep it so simple, people think it's far-fetched. Like it can't be true. And you were like that. You were like, oh, this can't be true. But you did it. You were like, all right, we talked, and I was like, just test it out. And you tested it out. You took the trial, you tested it out, and you actually did do it, and you found out differently. So, I mean, that's awesome. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Sure, man. You know, simple things are, you know, people these days, they don't affect simple things. It's like all my friends are telling me, hey, man, I lose body fat. I just tell them, just eat less. And they're telling me, what? Just eat less. And what about the carbs? You know, eliminating the rice. Bro, just eat less. But they don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's so simple, but they don't get it.
Yeah, it's people don't, a lot of people don't want actually an answer. They just want an excuse. They would rather you give them like a big long explanation and then they'd be like, see, there, that's why I can't do it.
Yeah. Hey, Pierre, speaking of that, how much of, when you were talking to me about how, man, I just don't think this is work, how much of that was your, do you think it was your way of making an excuse for you not doing it?
A lot.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So,
that's about as good as you can say. Was it also because was it just different than everything else you'd heard, or are you just, we weren't ready to start something.
The real truth. Before that, I was like anti-bodybuilding. I really want to do another bodybuilding workout. I was more into conditioning, you know, type of stuff like the UFC workout, stuff like that, you know, MMA workout.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was, you know, more, I don't want to say the word functional, because we all know that is marketing, but let's say it here, you know, more like a type of functional type of workout that, you know, so-called trainers are selling now these days. And when I saw the workout, it was, you know, this is a bodybuilding workout. So at first, I really didn't want to do it just because of that fact, you know. Oh, here we go again, another bodybuilding workout. So, you know, that's why I was making a lot of excuses and, you know, it ain't gonna work. This program doesn't have squats, doesn't have deadlifts, you know, stuff like that.
That's a really good point. So it wasn't functional training. It wasn't anything you recognized. But the thing that it looked the most like was bodybuilding. So why go back to that?
Yeah, I was looking more like for, you know, like a type of an aggravated type of workout where, you know, you're doing the deadlifts, the squats, you know, type of basic compound exercises.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, my friend of mine was into that, you know, that type of training. That's the type of training I want to do at that time. So when I saw the workout, it's, oh man, another bodybuilding workout. Not really interested in this one. But, yeah. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. And it's really funny, you know, when we talked about in the podcast about how people label themselves, I find myself that I don't, even though technically what I do is bodybuilding, I have never once considered myself a bodybuilder. Like, I don't even think of myself that in that regard, even though that's technically what we're all doing. I don't know why. John, do you know what I'm talking about here?
Yeah, I think it's because bodybuilder or bodybuilding is associated with so many more things than just going to the gym to exercise muscle. Like, basically what we do is go to the gym to try to make certain muscles bigger. And we like the way that they look in that bigger shape. That's all we're doing. So technically, yes, we're building parts of our body. But bodybuilding and bodybuilders are an industry. They are an obscure group of people who take all of that to the extreme. So in that respect, none of us are bodybuilders. We're just guys going to the gym to get to look better. Bodybuilders have maybe started there and have long since taken it some way over the deep end. And they're just – I can see why Pierre and any of us wouldn't want to be labeled as a bodybuilder, because those guys are obvious and they're doing something else. They're not really – they've kind of – they've gone way too extreme into it, whereas we're not – that's not what we're about. We're just about looking better.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So Pierre, what kind of aha experiences have you had? I mean, just things, well, all of a sudden, when did it just click for you that you're like, okay, I get it. This is it. I believe.
I think, the way, you guys described, you know, the AI, you know, index, it just, after, you know, reading the manual and looking at the research, and, you know, it just makes sense to me, you know. While you were training before, like a UFC fighter, when you're not gonna step to the cage, but deep in your mind, your number one goal is to look, you know, muscular, to be bigger. So why not work out this way? So, by reading, you know, the guidelines and the information, it just, you know, it just makes sense. And it just makes sense also, you know, to do the shoulder workout 4 days a week. I mean, if you want, you know, that part of the shoulder to grow, you have to work at, you know, constantly. So, you know, just makes sense that, you know, just click when I read everything, you know, regarding, you know, the type of science that it got, and, you know, the real true when it comes to the reality of how much muscle we can gain, and since we can only gain so much muscle, so why not train this way to get the best quality muscle we can have and to look as big as possible without weighing that much. So it just makes sense to me, you know, it was, you know, this is perfect way to train for my goal, which is, you know, to look good at the end of the day. That's my main goal. You know, it's not health, or it's not conditioning like I used to do before. It's just, you know, looking good in the mirror.
So is it kind of a relief now, knowing that you kind of got this handled and you don't have to look at this stuff anymore? I mean, does it, once you kind of came to the conclusion and, you know, that you really jumped into it, and do you feel like a load's been let off of you?
You know, it feels like, you know, in the movie Matrix, where Neo is with the other guy. I forgot the name.
Morpheus.
You know, you have, yeah, Morpheus. You have the option of having the red or the blue pill, and then, you know, he takes a pill and he finds out everything that there is to know about the truth. You know, that's what happened to me. It's like, okay, so this is nutrition. What I've been reading before, which I really didn't believe, that, you know, calories in, calories out. Okay, so this is the truth about training. Okay, so everything that I read in the bodybuilding magazines is basically manufactured to sell me products I really don't need. and it's not about getting results. So I was like, man, well, you know, it was like, you know, cleaning myself, you know, of all the crap that I used to have before, all the beliefs and everything. So it just makes sense. You know, it was a big relief when, okay, I don't have to eat 6 meals a day. Okay, I don't have to take pre-workout, post-workout, during workout. I don't have to take the hundreds of supplements that supposedly you need to take to build muscle. Okay, so it was a really, you know, relief when I realized, okay, I can't have a life.
Mm-hmm. And still win a contest.
Before, yeah, you know, I can't have a life. And something I forgot to mention in the nutrition part, you know, I am a big fan of cookies and cream. So every week I had like 48 or 52 ounces, depending on the type of ice cream I had, of cookies and cream. And sometimes even 2-3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I had no problem, you know, gaining any body fat. So, you know, here we go again, you know. It's just calories in, calories out, you know. And, you know, I'm very meticulous about my, about the food I eat and how much I eat, but, you know, sometimes I break the rules, but I don't break the bank. So just big time relief when, you know, like I said before, you know, I can't have a life. And before, when I was reading the magazines, you know, one time I remember that I was eating up to 8 meals a day. I mean, can you have a life eating 8 meals a day?
No, I can't. So how did it feel? How did it feel when you finally took your after pictures? I mean, you did everything you're supposed to do, and then you saw your after pictures, and then you looked at your before pictures. I mean, how did that make you feel?
Well, actually, I remember my dad came here to my house, and he took my after measurements and my after picture. And when I took my clothes off, he was like, man, you have no body fat on you. You're ripped. And, you know, my dad is one of those guys who really doesn't make any comments. He's very low-key. He doesn't make any comments at all. So, you know, I was like, wow. That really, you know, inspired me because, you know, I have a lot of love for my dad. And, you know, he doesn't talk much. So... Mm-hmm. That comment, and when I saw the after photo, I was like, bro, man, you did it. I mean, you really did it. You know, have any of you guys seen the movie Fight Club?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
With Brad Pitt?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we've seen it.
Okay. Remember Brad Pitt's condition in that movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was Jack.
Okay. Yeah. That has been always one of my goals, to be like that, to be ripped like that.
Well, dude, you
and,
are.
You know. Yeah. So when I saw the after photo, and I have like a photo of that movie, of that Tyler Durden character in that movie. So when I compare the photos, I said, well, my brother, you reached the goal. You really did it, you know, because always being a big, big goal of mine to really look like, you know, that in that movie, you know, ripped to shreds, you know.
Yeah, so I agree.
Seeing that after photo, it was, well, you reach that goal. Now it's time to, you know, put some more muscle on it. So.
Gotcha. So after the contest, what would you say, what are you doing now?
Now I'm doing reverse engineering, so something like Brad Pillon did when he was researching diet. So instead of researching eating, he researched no eating. So mm-hmm. Right now what I'm doing is I'm reverse engineering now, and what I do is I want to know how much little training can I do to maintain and build muscle, and how much little amount of food I can eat to maintain and build my muscle, because I think the majority of us, we ate too much food mm-hmm. that we really, really need to eat. So that's something I'm kind of working out. And I'm doing that on my training and my nutrition, so, you know, and getting ready for the next competitions you guys are going to throw.
So you're getting back in.
Yeah, I mean, my goal is to put, like, in that, you know, in 12 weeks, to put at least another inch on my shoulders, so I need the pressure, so.
That's great, and so... And I like what you just said about the reverse engineering. So you did, during the contest, you went one direction. You tried to see how much you could do, and now you're trying to see what the lower end is, too.
Yeah. For example, right now, I'm just doing the AI workouts. And like I said before, I dropped the leg workouts, and I'm not doing the other two workouts. So I'm just doing the four AI workouts. And I'm getting stronger, bro, you know.
Good. Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, and that's good that you've identified that now, too.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm getting stronger, and the volume is just right for me. So right now I'm just experimenting and see, you know, how, you know, if, you know, it's working for me. But like I said, I'm getting stronger, I'm getting results, so I'm just doing the AI workout. So, you know, the volume is there. Just trying to, you know, keep up the intensity and, you know, see where I can go from.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So and we're going to close out, but what would you say to other guys, you know, other guys just like you, you know, mm-hmm. thinner guys, you know, guys that want to, you know, that we've already talked about how you kind of believe certain things. You know, basically, what have you learned from all this that you can tell them that would help them out?
As far as car gainers, I don't believe no longer in labels. I mean, there's really no car gainer. The car gainer is just marketing at the end of the day. You know, for guys like me, you know, who ectomorph, you know, forget about that. You know, it's hard building muscle. You can build muscle, sure. It can be slower than most other people, but you can still build muscle. And this program will do it. I mean, if you follow it, you know, you have the boosters, you have the reaches, just remember to follow the guidelines. Don't do what I did. I did it on purpose because you want to break down, you know. Just follow the guidelines, and if you follow the program the way it is prescribed, you're going to get results. And as far as nutrition goes, there's no need to eat a high-calorie diet. You know, I was not eating a lot of calories for supposedly my body type, and I still was able to, you know, maintain my waist and gain muscle without, you know, eating a lot of food. So, you know, just, you know, this program works if you, you know, put it to use and use it the way it's prescribed. And you can build muscle, lose body fat, and attract looks for the ladies also.
Nice. John, you got anything you want to comment on real quick, buddy?
No, I mean, that's better said than I could ever. I mean, I do like the point you Pierre brought up about you can build muscle without eating any extra calories. And that's, I mean, that was last week's podcast too, that will never go away, that point. And I'm so glad that you kind of brought that up and pointed out that you improved your AI score. You look, you know, you built size without stuffing your face and without actually getting heavier.
I mean, sometimes I was eating just one meal a day, you know, so I was not getting any mega calories, and I had no problem to, you know, increasing my shoulder size. So I hope that one day that you have to eat high calories diet one time or another, because there's really no need. I used to believe that. As a matter of fact, I did an experiment, where I was eating up to 12 meals a day. I was getting like 8,000 calories a day or even more. And basically it was a low carb diet, high protein, high fat. And in 2 months, I gained over 25 pounds. But all of it was fat. You know, there was really no muscle mass increase or, you know, just fat. So, you know, here you go. You know, I already tried this high calorie stuff, and at the end of the day, you know, if you eat more calories that your body needs, it's going to store as fat. So there's really no need, even if you're weight training, to have any of those high calories. So you're going to get fat. So, you know, just be patient, you know, train and be patient and eat the food you like and just keep an eye close in the calorie level and your weight measurement and just keep training. And, you know, you're going to gain muscle. You're going to get stronger over time, but, you know, just have patience. Remember, we're drug-free. We're not genetic freaks, so it takes time. And, you know, sooner or later, you're going to get to that goal, but there's no need to eat high calories. You know, try it. It works if you want to get fat, then, or like you guys were talking about, look big in a T-shirt. I remember when I gained that 25 pounds, my friends were telling me, man, she looked big. But that was with a t-shirt on. When I took the t-shirt, I just looked fat. Now I look good without the t-shirt. So now I'm training to look good without a t-shirt instead of before was training to look big with a t-shirt. So, you know, you have to make your choice.
So,
but, you know, just follow the workout, be patient, eat the food you like, just of checking the calorie level and your waist measurement to see if your calorie level is not getting your waist bigger, and you're good to go. It's that simple.
So Pierre, I guess the last point is, as far as body weight goes, mm-hmm. would you tell other, I guess we were talking about ectomorphs, would you tell other guys just to forget about the idea of weighing a certain amount and just go with the look instead of the weight?
Well, John, you do have like this kind of obsession that I have to weigh like certain amount of weight, and I realize, you know, that's really not important. And two, I mean, how do you go and say, you know, I have to weigh X amount of pounds? I mean, doesn't make sense. For example, now if I go to a doctor, the doctor is going to tell me, look, you have to be waiting in order to be healthy 165 pounds. But that's not the case for me. And I'm healthy, and I have better strength and better endurance than when I was weighing 165 pounds. So just for ectomorphs, forget about having like a set weight that you have to weigh X amount of pounds. That's really not important. Just go for the look. Just the EI measurement is, you know, is just the key to, you know, have a goal. Like, for example, mine is to go shoulder, to get my shoulder to 52 inches. So right now I don't even weigh myself like to see how much I weigh, because I really don't care at all. It's all about, you know, my measurement now and how I look in the mirror. You know, I really don't care no longer about, okay, I have to weigh 160 or 80 pounds. That really doesn't matter to me. It's all about the II measurement and how look I good and how look I look in the mirror, you know.
Man, I couldn't have said it better myself. Could not have said it better myself.
Yeah, I mean, that was great.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, Pierre, buddy, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. I think you're going to help a lot of people out, buddy.
Thank you.
No problem.
Pleasure,
man.
And thank you to you guys who really did your research and, you know, made this program available to all of us here. We appreciate
it. Awesome, man. Well, man, I appreciate it. We're going to let you go, but we will definitely talk at you later, man.
Cool, man. Take care, guys.
All right. All right, guys. Welcome back. I hope you really enjoyed that and got a lot out of it. Like I said, that one was a little bit different. And like I said, Pierre's story is a little bit different than some of the others that you will hear in these interviews. But, you know, John, the first thing that I really wanted to talk about, and the thing that really hit me, was the fact that Pierre had, you know, some depression issues that he was kind of battling on. And, you know, it seems to be, and well, let's back up. In no way, shape, or form do we want to say that, you know, our programs and systems and stuff like that are going to be able to cure depression or anything like that. I mean, that's kind of, I don't want to say that's ludicrous, but, you know, before we even go down that road, you know, obviously this is his, this is what happened with him. Could things like this happen with you? Of course they could. It just depends on where you're at and what mind space you're in and things like that, and where you are. But for him, it seemed to be that a lot of it really revolved around his body image and how he thought he was thin, things like that. So first off, I mean, does that even make sense? Because I know a lot of people are even going to think about this type of thing.
Oh, I think so. I mean, in Pierre's case, it seems as though, I mean, without being a trained psychologist, if you're chasing an image that you can't catch and you're chasing it for a long time, and this isn't a foreign concept. Everyone's image of their body and how they view themselves has something to do with how you carry yourself and your image of who you are as a person on a whole. It's impossible to separate who you think you are kind of mentally or emotionally or spiritually, if you want to use that kind of word, from your physically what you are. It's like you are your body. Like, you know, we can talk about the homunculus, the little man inside your head, but you are your body. You can't live your life without being in your body. So the image, you know, the outward image your body portrays has some influence on how you view yourself. And if you don't like it, or you want it to be something else, and you're trying over and over again to make it into something else, and you can't get there, I could see how that would wear away at you to the point where you could feel a bit hopeless. Like, you could feel not really in control. You could feel like you don't have much influence over yourself or your life. And I can see how it could lead you down a depressive path anyway. It makes a lot of sense to me the way that it happened. And the way he said that it changed everything, and he used really key words, like he said it made him calm. And that, you know, that once he accepted the fact that, well, this is what I am, I don't have to get any heavier, and really just focus on your proportions, and lo and behold, he actually has a golden ratio. Now, granted, he's overall, his proportions are good, he's just overall smaller, but there's nothing wrong with that. And people, you know, were really, really supportive, and they were, you know, when they saw his pictures, everyone was like, wow, they were blown away. And so now, you know, that's pretty powerful stuff. He went from being constantly dissatisfied to just recategorizing how he should view himself, and he was a lot more pleased with it. And most people looking at him would be like, well, who cares how much you weigh? You look good. So it's part of the problem of just thinking you need to be heavier, this whole building muscle for the sake of building muscle and being heavier on the scale for the sake of being heavier on the scale. It's such nonsense. Because what does it mean? It doesn't actually mean anything. So having a new way to categorize the view of your body obviously helped him a lot, and I think it'll help most people, because then you at least have an idea of what you're looking for, and the target isn't way off in the distance, and it's not always ahead of you. There actually is an attainable target.
Yeah, it's really strange, this whole heaviness thing that, you know, we've kind of danced around it and jabbed it, and, you know, we kind of knocked it out a little bit as well. But, you know, just to kind of put some clarity on it, just going to give you an idea of how vague of a measurement it really is when it comes to muscle size and things like that. Just me in particular, let's say Friday morning, I weighed in at 190, which is, you know, I've been cutting down, you know, again, and, you know, it's come really easy, and, you know, the weekend's here, so I'm kind of relaxed a little bit, you know, with eating, and I'm not overeating, but I just ate more because I'm going really low to cut, and mainly just to kind of prove a point from, you know, one standpoint. But the other thing is, you know, even though I was eating still lower than what you would consider, so below 2,000 calories, probably even below 1,800, probably more like 1,500, you know, just the fact that I ate a little bit more, you know, I also stored a bit more water. So the next day I weighed in at like 191 and a half or something, you know, at the same time, you know, after going to the bathroom and all this other stuff. So it's like just those fluctuations in water, you know, and that's, that's in a deficit. I mean, it's funky.
Well, think about that. Like, if you have a body weight goal, and that body weight goal affects your confidence levels, affects how you view yourself, it may affect your level of, I guess, satisfaction or happiness. And then, so now, just a bit of water and a bit of food in your system can change your body weight. So you're just telling me water and food on a transient basis can affect how you view yourself. If your body weight is a major piece of how you view yourself, that's kind of ridiculous. Like if you allow something as trivial as just how much you weigh on the scale to matter that much.
Sure. But you know, the funny thing about it is that I get it because, you know, even, you know, you're sitting there and, you know, you get up there and I had a feeling I was going to be heavier just because, you know, just all the stuff we're talking about and you just kind of know. Because I know I ate more than I had been eating, which has pretty much been like chicken feed. And, you know, when the number was higher, I mean, I got a letdown. And I know I should know better, but still inside there was something something just went shit. You know, and I had to like catch myself. I'm like, what are you doing, dude?
Oh yeah, it's I guess a lot of people aren't paying attention to it. When they finally start paying attention to it, then you'll notice how much your body weight actually fluctuates and how sort of pointless it is. Like if someone says, "How much do you weigh?" That doesn't even make any sense. It's like, well, what do you mean? How much did I weigh this morning? How much do I weigh after lunch? How much do I weigh after drinking two glasses of water? Like, what do you mean? How much do I weigh? Like any. If you actually stopped and if you actually for the next 48 hours measured your weight every 2 hours, you'd have a huge range. You'd be all over the place. Like mm-hmm. you'd be up and down. I mean, anyone who wants to try this, you'd be up and down a good 5-6 pounds at least throughout that range. So at any given moment, how much you weigh, I don't know. I could be 182. I could be 188. Like it's, what do you mean? How much do I weigh? And so actually having that weight really matter that much to who you think you are is kind of you're setting yourself up for some heartache if you're that tied to your weight.
Right. Exactly.
Now, I mean, without it being tied to a better metric, which of course we're biased, and I think the AI ratio is the better metric.
Right. Oh, exactly. Well, and the other thing too was that, you know, I think a lot of people were really, when they saw Pierre's pictures, were really taken aback when they found out how much he really did weigh.
Oh, and the fact that he didn't gain any weight. And it's like, well, that was never the point. And that's the whole hang up about weight. So it's, I don't know. I think we're never going to be able to put this one to rest, the idea of weight and muscle.
Right. Well, the other thing about it too, not even that, but you know, the fact when, I mean, you know, in his after pictures, he looks good. But when people were like, how much do you weigh? And he was like, you know, a 131 or something like that. And he's what, 5'10",
5'11", something like that.
Right. I mean, so he's like, you know, a little bit shorter than I am, and I mean, ripped to the bone. There's no doubt about that. But if people were like, "Really? That's it?" Almost, it's kind of like what's the word I'm looking for? Almost like just mesmerized at the fact that he looked that good, but he still only weighed like a 130 and some change. You know?
But why? And this is, I guess, this gets kind of into what we were saying. Why would anyone want to weigh more if weighing more wasn't going to look that good? Or that lean. Now this gets back into accepting your genetics. Like Pierre's clearly an ectomorph, mm-hmm. but so he'll never have endomorphic size muscle, but he'll have fantastic definition that an endomorph could almost never have. And if they try, it'll take the life out of them just to try to get to that kind of definition. Whereas he can get it pretty. You know, it's not too difficult for Pierre to be that defined. So. Instead of focusing on the things your somatotype doesn't provide you, we got to learn to appreciate the stuff that your somatotype does. And that's like, you know, ectos are going to have definition endos can only dream about. Endos are going to have muscle mass that ectos can only dream about. And then mesos, we kind of are stuck in the middle and we don't get either. We'll have a little bit of both. And that's it. So, I mean, one day, you know, everyone, you know, you listening, you're going to have to accept the fact that you're somewhere on that spectrum. And there's no exact definition of what any of those, I mean, there's rough ideas and not everyone there's very few pure ectos and very few pure endos and everyone else is sort of a mishmash in the middle somewhere. But eventually you have to recognize that's you're somewhere in there and that, you know, be thankful of where you are and the thing that your somatotype gives you. And then work at the other thing that it doesn't give you, and that's it. And if you can't accept that, and you keep wishing you were the other one, you're going to be set up for a lifetime of heartache and just disappointment if you actually think you're jumping the spectrum.
Right. And then the other thing, too, is that, you know, the best thing about what we, I guess, from where I'm sitting at from a standpoint is that, you know, it's now that we're not getting into the bigger is better at all costs type of a deal, and there's kind of like this saddle point for everyone to kind of meet in the middle, even though, you know, there's going to be a swing, you know, kind of, you know, both ways as far as where people are really going to end up. You know, it's, I think that if guy like Pierre, once he finally grasps the fact that, you know, he didn't really have that far to go as far as to get the ratio. That's the other thing I like about the ratio too. For most people, is if you put your ratio in, I mean, from what I've seen, most people kind of end up around like 1.4 or 1.3 or something. That really doesn't sound like a long way away from 1.6. So it's kind of achievable, rather than saying I need to gain 50 pounds of muscle, and you're like, well, shit, dude, that's a long ways away. There's no way in hell I'm going to ever get there.
Well, and those type of claims don't take into account how big the person is to start with or their somatotype. Mm-hmm. Like a big, tall guy might actually be able to gain 50 pounds of muscle, but a shorter, maybe thinner guy is like, it isn't happening. It's there's even though we have the concept of the AI index and the golden ratio that I think can be applied to every guy. You still have to consider where you're starting. I mean,
sure.
And like, I think we all, as we get into better shape, converge to at least closer to a middle ground, because if we're all moving towards a similar AI, but we're still all going to look slightly different. Even if we get there, it's just going to be a bit different. And again, you can't cheat your genetics. And I know that's a big thing right now that they're marketing is like cheat your genetics. But anyone who's ever tried, it doesn't really work. I mean, like Pierre said, he was eating 8 and 12 times a day, and all he did was get fat. He went up to 165 pounds, but he was fat. So, right. You know, he looked bigger in a shirt, like we talk about. Like, do you want to look good with a shirt on or a shirt off? And then he took his shirt off, and people around him were like, "Oh, dude, you're fat." And then he wouldn't have those rips that you see in the picture. And then people, you know, be like, well, okay, so now you're just 165 pounds and you're not even ripped. So, like, what was the point of that for him? You know, he was following all the advice of, like, getting bigger and, you know, eating, like, massive amounts of calories. It's just not the way to do it.
Yeah, that kind of sounds funny because it's like, okay, so he was sitting at, like, 130, 135, but he was ripped and people were like, damn, you're ripped. But then, you know, he had this goal of getting up to 200 pounds, you know, and gaining muscle and stuff like that and putting on all this weight. But, you know, he's like, oh, I weigh 165 now. Sweet. You know, but then, you know, people look at him and go, well, dude, you're like fat and you still got another 35 pounds to go.
Right. Right. Well, it's the belief that you actually can build more muscle than you can. Like, it's just the amount of muscle you can, quote, build is so limited to compared to what anybody it's compared to what most people believe. And I mean, I fight with people on this all the time and I'm like, all right, well, you prove me wrong. Go ahead, go out there and build that muscle and show it to me. And, you know, scientifically, I can't find it. Realistically, I've never seen it. Like anecdotally through as many people as I've ever seen in the gym, the only people that can jump like 50, you know, 30, 40, 50 pounds up is it's all drug induced. So, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm not like, I'm not nailing those people to my proverbial moral cross. I don't care if you want to use drugs to gain 50 pounds of muscle, then do it. Like, I don't care. And if you're happy with that, then knock yourself out. You'll be happy. But I'm just saying you need to at some point accept the fact that that's how that much muscle is actually built.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm even to the point now, you know, even being where I am, and like I said, I'm 6 foot tall. You're 6 foot tall at 200 pounds. You know, that 200-pound goal, I thought about it yesterday. I'm like, if you're 200 pounds and you're sub 6 foot, you're fat, unless you're on drugs.
Unless you're on drugs or you're a true, true endomorph and you train serious. And you've been training serious and you've really, like, I don't know too many 6 foot tall people who can actually be 200 pounds and lean.
Yeah.
Without drugs.
Right. I mean, yeah, you just don't – I mean, when we're talking lean, we're talking, you know, teen body fat percentage.
Yeah, like I'm like in the shape where you'd be happy with your shirt off.
Right, when you can actually see your abs and people be like, damn, nice abs.
Yeah, and we're not talking 200-pound shirt on look. We're like 200-pound shirt off.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about that. I was like, man, I was sitting at 200 pounds and, you know, again, still same thing, pretty strong. I mean, doing, you know, stuff most people aren't. I mean, there aren't many people that go in the gym that are picking up the triple-digit dumbbells and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like humongous by any means, but still, I'm, you know, sitting at 200 pounds, you would think that I would look better shirt off than I did, and I was still carrying what I would consider significant levels of body fat. I mean, I'm not huge, but it, you know, it's not – even at 190, it's still – you know, I'm still lifting the same amounts. Some lifts are still going up, but still, there's still stuff there that shouldn't be there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At 6 foot.
Yeah, I know. People, it's just not – I think part of this expectation of body image comes from looking at pro athletes, like the championship game's on right now, one of the football games, and I'm sure guys are looking at pro athletes and thinking, oh, that guy's 6 foot tall, like, you know, he's however much, you know, 210, 225, I must be able to do that. Two things though, pro athletes should never be your model, because A, most likely, if they made it all the way to the pros, they were genetically gifted, but like they're, you know, if they were genetically gifted just to begin with, let alone having a strength coach and a system to train within, and more than likely have at some point, if not currently, used drugs. So you're looking at, in many cases, you're looking at a genetically already genetically superior body that also has drugs. I'm like, and you actually think you're going to do that? So you're looking at an outlier who's also doing things that you're not doing.
Right.
Like, and yeah.
Well, and just has access to that level, a high level of coaching, and
they can't afford to miss workouts. Like, they're training all the time. So, like right off the bat, don't use a pro athlete as your model, because unless you live a pro athlete life and you had pro athlete style genetics, you can't do that. It's back to cheating your genetics. Now, we're not saying you can't look, like, really good. Like good enough that anyone who saw you with your shirt off, they'd be like, whoa, like, you look good. I mean, you can still have that, and that's what we're talking about. We're just saying don't look to a pro athlete and think that's what you need to be.
But even then, we're not talking. I mean, the guys like the defensive backs and stuff like that, and even some of the running backs. Now, if you look at some of the running backs, I mean, even those guys, I mean, they're still carrying some fat on them.
Oh, yeah, well, and that's the other assumption. Under that equipment, do you think they all have six-packs? They don't. Most of them, like, not all of them anyways.
Yeah, I you know, I've seen some of them. I mean, they're okay, but they're not like ripped to the bone like you would see people competing in. Not even close.
Oh yeah, I'd say a lot of pro athletes aren't anywhere near as ripped as Pierre is in his after picture.
Oh yeah, no, not even close. Actually, the closest person we would probably see, we looked at him the other day. Who was the sprinter we looked up?
Yeah. Well, but as far as a football player, it might be somebody like Terrell Owens. But
right.
but even as football players go, he's. Like, they would even comment on how much more ripped he is than most.
Sure. But so he's like 6'3" or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, as an example, not all pro athletes are in that kind of shape. I'm just trying to get my head around where people get their idea from what they think they can look like. Like, if it's fitness models and bodybuilders, that's just ridiculous because they're just full of drugs. Like, there's no point in even using them. So I'm just trying to find some other I guess it's – I'm sure I've said this before. It's just an aggregate of everything people see in the media. They see – you know, they see some pro athletes. They see some fitness models. They see some bodybuilders. They see some celebrities. And then they aggregate all the images they've ever seen and maybe some of the bigger dudes in their gym. And then out of all of that, they just build this mythical idea of how big they think they can get and how ripped they think they can be.
Right.
And since they've seen pictures of people who've always – you for sure have seen a picture of someone who's bigger than the idea you have in your head and more ripped. So since somewhere out there there's somebody who's even bigger and more ripped than what you even want, that makes it seem like, well, at least what I want must be possible, even though it actually isn't. So this odd sort of it's this vague kind of like it's there, but you don't know how to get there, and you don't really have any proof that there is even possible.
Well, the other thing, too, is that, number one, you have to trust what people tell you how much they weigh as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, we know guys that, you know, they'll claim to be, you know, 180, 190 or whatever, and you know damn well they're only 170.
And it comes back to what kind of weight. Is that, like, fed and after drinking some water, or is that after a fast, or, you know, what, in what shape? You know, give me a picture that compares to the weight, like.
Or maybe they are 180, 190 right now, but you're thinking that it's based on they look the same as they do as they do in the picture in the website, but if you saw them live, you would notice that it's not so much the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might have been ripped at 170 in that picture. Now they're 190. You're assuming the picture. If they say they're 190 now, that picture is what they are, and it's not the case. Let's go back to this thing because, you know, one of the things people kind of aspire to a lot of times, and we kind of beat this up a little bit about sprinters and stuff. So I looked up Tyson Gay, and you can look it up. I mean, you guys can look up Tyson Gay if you want to. He's 5'11". He's ripped out of his mind. I mean, he's got some good muscle size and definition. He's, like I say, he's 5'11". He weighs 165.
And he's not in a shape that anyone would ever turn down if someone said, hey, do you want to look like that?
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. I mean,
But he just doesn't seem – he seems like he should be heavy. Like, and I'm still the same way. I'll look at him and I see his weight and I'm like, huh, seems like he would be heavier. And then I have to check myself. I'm like, why would I think he's heavier?
Right.
You know, instead I should look at it and go, oh, that's what 165 looks like. Like, I don't know where I get my idea that look must be 185. Like, so it's just, I don't know. There's a disconnect between body weight and look, and people don't get. And I don't know if it's pervasive lying or if it's a height distortion where people assume, like, I don't know what it is, but people just think, same thing with Pierre. They were shocked to see how light he was. I think guys think we're supposed to be heavier than we are. It's partly a height thing. Like, you need to be pretty freaking tall to be ripped and heavy. Like, I was looking at a Fitness RX magazine and they're featuring Ron Artest on the cover, and he's what, 6'8", 6'9"?
Yeah.
And he's like, maybe 260. And,
yeah,
and he's in good shape. He's got a visible set of abs, but that's 6'9 or 6'8 at 260.
Right.
Like, when I was my heaviest, I was 250 and change. Like, what was I thinking? Like, there was no way I was going to be lean and too, like, you know what I mean? Like, what was I doing? So, this distortion of size versus, like weight size, I guess, versus definition. It's like people, you just can't say, I want to be 200 pounds and ripped. It's like, for that to actually happen, you would need to, there's a certain height you have to be for that to actually work. And that, and that's it. There's all the, you know, unless you add in a certain amount of drugs, you can't just pick a body weight and say, I'm going to be ripped at that body weight.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing is, this is what makes me happy about some of the little weird and fun kind of experiments we're doing in the background right now that we're going to let all these guys see. You know, just messing around with all this different stuff that we're talking about, water weight and all this, just to show you how pervasive this stuff and how much it really does matter, and then basically how much some of the other stuff really doesn't matter. That's why I'm kind of happy to kind of show that, because it's really going to shed some light on to a lot of the things that the people are, you know, assuming. And that's one of the things that that I know and you know as well, is that, you know, there are a lot of assumptions going on right now, you know, in this basic industry. And a lot of it is because of just basically just mass blanket statements, just mass bandwagon stuff, because, you know, everybody's going to market the same type of stuff and everybody's going to get on the same bandwagon to market because it sells stuff. But that doesn't mean it's true.
Or it's true in a relative sense, but not in an absolute sense, it's irrelevant. Like, you know, right. Looking at a claim about muscle building and, you know, some kind of program or some kind of supplement caused a guy to gain, a group of people to gain 10 pounds of muscle. And then when you look at it, it's a bunch of people who've never trained before, and all they've done is gone from being very light for their height and training experience and age to average for their height, training experience, and age. So, but the person reading it is like, well, I don't care about that. I've been training for 10 years. Like, I want to go 10 pounds more than an experienced lifter. I don't want to, you know, everyone gained 10 pounds when they first started working out. But you know what I mean? So there's a lot of relative claims that sound good, and then when you look them in context, you're like, oh, well, that I've already been through my beginner's growth spurt, and I'm not interested in, like, I can't do that again. Now I want the experienced trainer's growth, like if that's possible.
Right.
So, and that, and that's a pervasive thing in the industry, like claims that are all based on, even scientifically, quote, validated claims are based on research done on inexperienced lifters, and that's purely because you can get a result out of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I say, man, there's lots of fun stuff that we're doing with that type of stuff. So I don't know, man. I think guys are going to be really not shocked. I don't even think we're going to fool anybody that's listening anymore.
You know, I don't think so. We'll probably – it's just a little bit more – I don't know. It's just a little experiments to prove our points, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just basically go, you know, all right, here's the experiment. What's going on? And the sad part about it, kind of like the thing with the how much you weigh thing you did on your blog, like everybody's pretty much guessing what it was and guessing low.
Shea did the stats on it, and people guessed within a pound and a half. When you aggregated all the guesses, people were almost right on the button.
Right.
And they knew what I was up to. So, but I mean, that's, you know, like, just trying to, you know, to show people, because some people were in the 230s and some people in the 150s. It's like, come on, you're just doing that to be different.
Well,
like as if anyone actually thought it was 150 pounds in that picture.
Well, they might have. They just haven't been listening.
Well, it's okay. Well, I don't know. I just find that difficult to believe.
Well, of course.
Anyways,
you're the science guy, out of touch with society and reality now.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. That's what it is, dude.
Right.
Okay, so let's.
There's just one more I wanted to touch on here. It was Pierre's overtraining experience. He actually. He said he literally ended up in bed and couldn't move for 2 weeks – or, sorry, a week. And that's – that kind of reaction is true overtraining. Now, very few people ever get to that. Most people train a bit too much and just feel like a little too sore, and that's mostly under conditioning. That's just not being ready for the training volume. Being bedridden for a week might actually be true overtraining, and you don't want that feeling. Like that's not good. And that's another instance where you're trying to make things happen in a time frame that's unrealistic, or you're trying to cheat your genetics. You just can't cheat your genetics. And I mean, you can try all you want, but it's, you know, you're if there's only so much clay to mold, you just can't, there's just no more clay there. So, and on the other side, for guys who are true endos, and then this isn't any people in the middle. I mean true endos. You may have to just almost kill yourself to get all the way to the definition that an ecto can have, and you don't have to. Like, you know, that's the sort of thing that that's kind of the that's the special thing that they have that you don't have. What you have is bigger muscles that they don't have, and you just have to kind of relish in the thing that you have. And you can't overtrain your way either to get the other thing. You might be able to do it for like a day or two just for a look, like for an endo to really rip up, but it's going to take everything out of you to do that. And you'll realize how unsustainable it is. And, you know, and that's it. So, I mean, I guess there's only so much training can do. I think training is obviously vitally important to getting your body to a condition that you like and to shaping and building the specific muscles you're interested in shaping and building. But it you still can't out train your genetics either. And some people will try to sell you this concept of, like, you know, trick your genetics and overcome your genetic plateaus by training. Like, that's an oxymoron by definition. Like, your genetic limits are your genetic limits. You can't. There's nothing you can do about them. And anyone who's actually marketing that has no concept of what they're actually saying.
Right. Well, the other thing too. I mean. The whole, and like I say, this is going to be your area. I am not an expert in genetics. I understand it, but I mean, that's pretty much a hard code. And with your body being, you know, wanting to be in homeostasis, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, I mean, whatever tricks and manipulation of hormones and all this other stuff that you want to try to do, I mean, eventually it's going to bounce back somehow, some way.
Well, I mean, even if you took an ecto and an endo and put them both on drugs, the endo still gets bigger. Because he's starting with more base material. It's kind of like when you look through at a lot of different bodybuilders throughout different eras. Certain bodybuilders can still get bigger than others. Like, so even mass consumption of drugs doesn't level out the genetic playing field. There's still a genetic component there. I mean, it more or less levels the playing field out, but you can still tell. So
oh, sure.
So, I mean, you know, so, I mean, for those of you who are interested in using drugs, I mean, knock yourself out. There's a lot you can do with drugs. But we're assuming you don't want to do that. And so now we're dealing with a lot tighter constraints with what you have to deal with naturally.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is you brought up your bodybuilding, even with drugs and things like that. The funny part about that is that nobody really – they never list any weights of these guys.
They do, and they self-report it. But you know, if you talk to guys, you find out that they lie a lot, and the weight.
What I've seen, they don't say, oh yeah, such and such walks on the stage. He's 257 pounds.
They may live at the show, but it's actually hard to track it down as like report right. It's not as simple as like looking up like players on a team and they give their like all their vital stats. It's like the, you know, how many years experience, their height, their weight. Yeah, no, you can't really find. There may be somebody out there who's like aggregated this, but I don't know that it's readily available.
Sure, but I guess the point I'm getting at is that even those guys, where you're talking about guys trying to pack on mass and stuff, at the latter stages of the game, at the high level, it's not about necessarily gaining more mass. It's about gaining more mass strategically. So, I mean, when they lose, I mean, you've been in contact.
Yeah, yeah. We have an old blog post, if you want to go back and find it, where we link to a video of Dorian Yates, who's a former Mr. Olympia, where he points that out. He's like, I think most guys kind of lie a little bit about how heavy they think they are. You know, like 1 year to the next, they don't look that much different, but they're saying they're heavier. And he was saying towards once you're an established competitor, he's like, it's a mistake to try to get any bigger.
Yeah, what's Pilon doing back there?
Oh, I don't know. I think – why, is that really loud?
Yes.
I think he was
there's like babies crying and like
– Oh, I think he's using a blender or something.
Tell him to kill it, dude.
I think is it still really loud?
Yeah, dude. It's like all in the ear.
Oh.
Jeez, man.
Well,
you guys gotta get out of the cave. Yeah, guys, they're creating this bunker. They've got a bunker now where they got all the chains, workouts, and all that stuff in the bottom of Elon's new house. So they're building up the Adonis bunker to do all the new workouts and all that stuff and all the new videos.
Actually, all the new pieces just came in. We've got it all assembled.
Oh, so now we just need a bod pod.
Well, yeah, that's yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, so guys, like, buy our stuff so we can buy a bod pod.
Yeah, yeah, and then we can do some really cool research.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we need about 20 grand.
Yeah. All right, so, well, we got off track there. So I guess we should wrap this one up.
Yeah, I mean, well, basically we can go back to kind of Pierre and what we can bounce back to what he kind of discovered in his little journey, a 10-week journey of self-discovery. And don't forget, too, as well, that, you know, in the beginning, Pierre didn't believe and he didn't buy in. I mean, that was one thing that he tells you in the interview, that he was like, man, I don't believe this shit's going to work. And I actually had to, you know, he was writing me back and forth. I was like, dude, just do it for 2 weeks. And he did. And now he's really happy. And the reason I think it is, and again, we go back to his, you know, his expectations of body image. He actually found that he could use what he had and he could do something really special with where he was. And, you know, that was awesome. The same thing with, you know, him being building muscle. He actually built muscle. And once he actually just settled down and just used, you know, the systems and just kind of did what we said, just did it instead of trying to take it and just go all out and add everything he could possibly add into it. He saw a lot better results. So that's kind of what I got out of the whole interview.
Yeah, I mean, there's a recurring theme here, and it's just to get things done and just be consistent. So, I mean, I guess beyond that, it's having the goal in sight too.
Yeah, yeah, having the goal is really strong. The consistency is really strong too. But you know what? Kind of what I've discovered in 2010, just about myself, is that the less time I spend thinking and the more time I spend doing, the better off I am. So it's more for me now. I've noticed this just in this past month. Anytime I catch myself trying to over research things and things like that, I really start missing the boat. And so I say, look, what's the simplest explanation for this? What's going to be the simplest solution to get from point A from point B? I find the model. I do that, and and it works like gangbusters because I get an action mode instead of research mode. Yeah. And I'm not the only person. So
yeah, I do the same thing, but I call it production versus consumption.
Right.
So am I producing or am I consuming? And if you're imbalanced, and most people are imbalanced, they're consuming more than they're producing, then that's where you get caught up in the process by analysis and all that kind of stuff. But the more you produce, you can still consume, like consuming information, consuming, you know, entertainment, whatever it is that you consume. But you have to be balanced with at least the equal amount of production. Production meaning, you know, production at the gym, production at whatever job you have or school or relationship. You got to produce. You can't go days and days when you just consume and don't produce.
Right. And we talked about this in another podcast. I just want to close out on this is that there's a difference between just in case learning or just in case consumption or on demand consumption or on demand learning. And the difference is that, you know, just in case you just kind of are like a big vortex or whatever. You just, whatever comes across, you just assume it and try to, consume it and try to put it in different spots for later at some point, knowing damn well you're never going to use it because that's how most of us are. We just, it's that just in case I'll ever need it. But the true, what I've been finding is that the true power is in being as productive as you can. And this is in health and fitness. This is just kind of life. But, you know, it really goes back to the Adonis-related material is that, you know, just do the stuff. And then once you hit a hang-up, that's when you go into consumption mode to ask questions and to find out how to get over that particular spot that you're having a problem with.
And that's your just-in-time learning.
Exactly. So you learn just in time. So and that's the advantage of the forums and stuff like that. So and it's really an underappreciated thing that we have for people that, you know, our customers and stuff like that. Like I say, not trying to pitch or anything, but that's just one of the things that's really underappreciated because you get to go through our systems and stuff like that. And then, you know, if you have a question that you're running into something with, you can just ask, get that handled, and get back into production mode. So there you go. That's about all I got.
Yeah, me too. I think we wrapped that up pretty good.
Cool, man. All righty, guys. Well, like I say, I am Brad Howard. John Barbin, he's here as well. And this is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.